So today I will be presenting on pelvic inflammatory disease, or PID, and the impact of recruit chlamydia screening policies on female active duty service members. This is the mandatory disclosure slide, and I have nothing to disclose. This is just a brief overview. A little bit of a background on PID. It's a female-specific inflammatory process caused by bacteria, and it affects the reproductive organs. The major etiologic agent is chlamydia, and the path of infection, meaning from a chlamydia infection to developing PID, can take up to 1 year. The symptoms are often mild to severe, even though the majority of the women report mild or even asymptomatic symptoms. So 85% of women often delay seeking care, and if they delay seeking care, they are at risk for long-term sequelae such as infertility. And in a recent study that we did, we looked 10 years back, and the percent of women who experienced infertility among women who had acute PID increased from 2% to 11% within a 10-year time period. And as Dr. Strong mentioned, the number of women in the military increases, in particular female recruits, so this may actually be becoming a much larger issue than we have right now. I wanted to look at chlamydia screening programs because with the thought, if we screen for chlamydia and if we treat it, then hopefully we're also having an impact on PID and can prevent it. So I looked at current chlamydia screening programs in the military, and currently all services screen females 26 or younger on an annual basis as part of their women's health checkup. But then I also looked at recruit chlamydia screening programs, meaning when they join the military, and not all services are screening. Some, such as the Coast Guard and the Air Force, started within the past years, and the Army in the past and currently does not have a recruit screening program. So the concern is if women join the military and they may be asymptomatic for chlamydia and they don't get any treatment or screening until their annual checkup 12 months later, then they may be at risk to develop PID and other consequences. So when I looked at the literature to see if anybody has looked at this issue, most have not. When they evaluate chlamydia screening program, they only look at the effectiveness on chlamydia and on treatment, but nobody has really looked at the long-term impact of chlamydia screening programs on women's health issues such as PID. There was one study by Bloom et al., which was published in 2008, but it had only four-year data from 2002 to 2005, and it only looked at the Army versus the Navy, so he didn't really look at all the services. So in my study, I wanted to determine the incidence of PID diagnosis during medical encounters of former recruit trainees during their initial 12 months on active duty following the completion of basic training. So I'm using PID as a surrogate to measure whether or not chlamydia screening has a long-term impact on women's health. My aims were to describe this population, look at some of their characteristics, describe PID incidence over time, and then stratify by age and service. My analysis plan was descriptive, retrospective. I looked at female service members who entered any of the services between January 1st, 2002 and 31 December 2011. I looked at all five services, even though the data on the Coast Guard that we have is incomplete prior to 2007, so I had to censor that data. I looked at active component only. We do not have complete data on reservists and guards, because if they're not on active duty, they're out in the civilian world and we don't have access to their medical record. The surveillance period was following them up for 12 months, and I used the Defense Medical Surveillance System, DMSS, which is the database that we house at the Armed Forces Health Surveillance Center. I used inpatient and outpatient ICD-9 codes. This is just a brief overview of the DMSS longitudinal database that we manage at the Armed Forces Health Surveillance Center. We basically capture every single medical encounter a service member has during their time on active service. We collect inpatient, outpatient information any encounters they had while they were deployed, the immunizations history. We look at their labs. We have annual health assessments and pre- and post-deployment surveys that they have to complete in regards to their mental health and physical health, as well as casualty data. So I defined PID by first encounter during the 12 months follow-up period, and I used ICD-9 codes and a case definition that was used in a previous study that we published that looked at military women in general, and I did that so I can compare how this population looks different from my recruit population. And here are some of the results. If you look at the top box, those were all the female trainees that enlisted during this time period, about 223,000. And one of my requirements was they had to complete basic training, and then they had to stay at least 12 months on active duty so I can follow them up. So if you look at the bottom right box, I was only left with about 161,000 females. And that's a steep dropout rate, but it's very common. You have about 30 to 50% of females, and in general of trainees, drop out within the first 6 months due to various reasons. So among those 161,000, I only had 1,750 PID cases during the 12 months follow-up time. That's about 1.1%. And the incidence rate was 11.2%. This is a list of variables that I looked at. And the last one on the bottom is chlamydia diagnoses after basic training. So that kind of told me that there's reinfection going on, even though some were maybe screened or not screened. This is an overview of total PID incidents over time. And I marked where the Coast Guard and the Air Force started their programs, and the Marines and the Navy already had them in place. And you can see that really over time, the overall trend is somewhat stable and actually went up a little bit after they initiated the screening programs. I think the overall trend line goes a little bit down, which may be due to the last data point, which has the significant drop. I'm not sure, since I don't have any new data, whether or not this was just a one-time drop or if this is a trend that continues to go on. But if you stratify it by service, you can see that the Army, the service that doesn't screen for chlamydia, has the highest rate compared to all the other services. Even though at the beginning and around 2009, the Marine Corps, who has a screening program in place, has a higher rate than the Army. And this figure looks at service numbers overall, but broken out by age group. And you can see that the youngest, the 17 to 20-year-olds, have the highest rate, except for in the Coast Guard. But then also, if you look at the 21 to 24-year-olds, their rate is kind of similar. So it seems to be overall the age group 25 and below that has a significant higher rate than the older ones. So in summary, the overall incidence rate was 11.2 per 1,000 person years. The trend remained somewhat stable, except for those who were assessed in 2011. And PID was highest among the 17 to 20-year-olds, blacks, non-Hispanic, service women in the Army, women that were not screened for chlamydia during basic training, married and other, which includes divorced and widowed, and service women who had a chlamydia infection after basic training but before they were diagnosed with PID. So as I mentioned earlier and throughout, the Army does not screen their women when they join the military, and they seem to be having the highest rates compared to all the other services. So maybe initiating a chlamydia recruit screening program seems to be maybe a good idea following along with all the other services. At the same time, the PID rates among Army were only 25% higher than the Marines, so I have that program in place since 1997. So it seems to me there is more going on than just screening and looking at there is reinfection occurring in that population. So high-risk behavior may persist after screening and education. So with that being said, just screening alone is maybe not what's driving those numbers, but also high-risk behavior. Also, we don't know much about the history of those women. They may have had a history of PID prior to entering the service and therefore are more susceptible to PID once they enter. Another variable I found interesting was that married and other women were at higher risk than single women, which I find a little bit surprising. I would have thought it was the other way around. And the same trend was also found by Bloom et al., which was the study I mentioned earlier, and he couldn't really explain it either. There are a couple of theories, so it may be worth looking at that variable a little bit closer. Some issues to consider. There are variations in race and ethnic composition among services. Especially the Army has a higher percentage of African Americans serving in their service. But when Bloom et al. Did a similar study and he adjusted for race and ethnicity, the rates didn't change much. Also, chlamydia screening was initiated prior to the official start date in the Coast Guard and in the Air Force. They did that just to launch it and make sure it works. And I don't know when it started, how many months prior to that date. There's really no documentation. So with that being said, women may be identified for PID or chlamydia early on and were treated and may have lowered the overall rate of PID. But again, I don't have that information at hand to verify that. And also, PID in general is very difficult to diagnose. Even though we're looking at the overall numbers, they may still be underestimating the actual incidence of PID. Some other strengths, I looked at a large population. I looked at all the females that I could look at within that surveillance period. It's a long surveillance time, and I was able to really follow up each individual and look at their entire medical history during that time period. So in conclusion, by 2006, all the services except for the Army had a recruit chlamydia screening program. Even though rates remain stable, women in the Army still seem to be at higher risk compared to the other services. So this may suggest to implement a chlamydia screening program. Yet high-risk behavior also seemed to be persisting after they were screened. So maybe a screening program along with a better education program to reduce the risk of chlamydia and hopefully then PID may be appropriate. Also further evaluation on the long-term impact of chlamydia screening programs on PID and PID related sequelae may be necessary. I just looked at a 12-month period, but it may be important too to look at their first entire assignment, which is a four-year period, and see how that changes with the annual screening and in addition to the initial recruit screening program. So those are my references, and are there any questions? Yes, go ahead. Since I used an administrative database that just looks at ICD-9 codes, I couldn't look at that variable. But I think that kind of highlights the limitation of my study. I really couldn't kind of look at such behavioral risk issues, condom use, or even how many partners did they have, or all that. Yeah, that's clearly missing. Yes. How they provide education?
Yeah, what kind of education is actually provided to say, you know, you're going to be at risk for PID and infertility and stuff if you get.
I have worked at Lackland, which is the only Air Force training base, so I can tell you from that. And I think it's pretty similar to the other training facilities. It's very, very basic. So, and it's done in a group setting. Whereas when you get your one-year follow-up, you really have a one-on-one relationship with your public health person or your provider, and they give more detail. But at basic training, it's very basic. They just say, this is what an STI is, don't do it again, and here's how you can prevent it, and thank you very much. From what I understand, I don't think there's a lot of detail, and I think that is maybe one of the problems. You mean in basic training, how we can improve it?
Like what, you know, in your opinion, what would you envision that being?
I think they need more information. Most of the recruits who enter the service are very young. The majority of them have oftentimes never seen a provider in their life. So they're really not familiar with what healthcare actually can do for you. And I think that needs to be outlined. So it shouldn't be just education, I think, on necessarily SDIs and how to prevent them, what are the consequences, but maybe also adding, this is the military healthcare system, and this is how you can utilize it. And those are the signs of symptoms. If you have issue, then you need to go and seek healthcare support and all that. I think it's not just the education necessarily about the topic. I think there's much more that most of those women are not aware of, and maybe that's why they're not seeking care during their first year. Yes?
Do you know why the Army doesn't
screen? I don't, and this is an ongoing issue. So hopefully I can add to that issue and hone it in and make a difference. There is a concern that, and you saw the washout, it's about 30 to 50% of recruits that actually leave. There may be a concern of cost benefit, that when we all screen them and we lose the majority of them, that it would not be, you know, really beneficial to them. I don't know. I know that a cost benefit analysis was done in a previous study, and they actually thought that there was more benefit than actually cost to that issue, but I don't know the details, and I haven't heard a statement from them why they don't want to do it. But those are my thoughts. But maybe it's behind that. Yes?
Do any of the services screen and educate men?
Good question. It's not mandatory. No. And I'm a public health officer, and I disagree with that, to be honest. I think, you know, they infect each other, so they both should be screened and both should be educated. They do receive the same education, sex education at the beginning like the females, but they're not being screened at all. Yes?
Do you have in your database whether they're married to fellow military personnel, the females are, or whether they're married to civilians? I think that may be.
We have their marital status. No, I wouldn't know that. No. Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much.